Our fourth case for this morning is Dean against Colvin. You must be Mr. Bayrak?
Yes.
Bayrak?
Bayrak is good.
Bayrak, okay.
I think I can push this up, right?
Yes, it can go up or down, whichever way. You just have to let it go for a minute. It's just on a reverse switch. There
you go. Okay, you that's good. I think that's as high as it goes. May it please the court. My name is Alex Bayrak, and I'm a student working in the IU Disability Law Clinic. I am here on behalf of appellant Mr. Lucian Dean. The ALJ's Google search of the appellant has led to a domino effect of three due process errors. Domino one was the failure to provide advance notice. Domino two, reliance on extrajudicial sources. And domino three, errors in weighing of evidence.
So I'd like to focus this for a minute, because as I read the transcript when the ALJ is talking about her husband's military service, his National Guard service, I read that as her effort to make sure that there wasn't a reason to disqualify, and she invites objections from Mr. Dean's counsel, and no objections are forthcoming. So I can't see any problem with that. Now, this New River, bridge thing may be a different issue, and I think everybody so far has said she should have stayed away from that, but then there was a harmless error thing. But I would love to narrow the issues and get that first one off the table, if that's at all possible.
The issue about the military?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
She says, if you have a problem, tell me, and they stand mute.
So, first off, it's correct that we should be using a harmlessness test. That would be appropriate in this situation. Second, she does bring that up, and there she does show correct behavior. However, she goes beyond that, and that's the issue. She doesn't stop at that. What she does is the whole hearing is colored by the experiences her husband has had.
Why? So, I don't see that, actually. I mean, she's trying to make sure that her husband and this man are not in the same unit, or they don't know each other. You know, they're perfectly reasonable points for her to be exploring, I think, but I don't see why you take such a big message from it. I'll tell you what, if there's anything that bothers me about this case, it's the fact that she looks and she sees that he spends, whatever it is, 19 years in the National Guard, and that he can function in the very highly structured environment of the National Guard. But her hypothetical question to the vocational expert isn't the question that I would have liked to know. Like, how many jobs are there out there in the economy that have a similar structured nature that would resemble the kind of jobs where he's managed to succeed? And we don't seem to get that question.
Correct. So at the end of the day, there are not jobs that Mr. Dean can have. And to elaborate, Mr. Dean cannot work, so he has both physical and mental disabilities, the most severe being his Asperger's syndrome, characterized by obsessive interest in a single topic and an inability to deal with change.
So does the evidence show that he really does lock himself in his room, though, for hours on it, for 23 hours a day? Or?
He does, and he does, and that's in the record. He has testified, and in his first marriage.
But then he goes out and he rappels, too, he rigs up this thing for the...
That was in 2006, but he does not engage in those activities any longer. There was a time where he was more physically capable and he could have engaged in those activities.
And mentally capable, you have to say, like, out
absolutely.
Amongst other people.
And that's the issue. I think just because he has Asperger's does not mean he's not cognitively capable. Those two things don't exclude each other.
Right.
It fits the fact that he was in the military, the high routine, the structure. Those fit with his Asperger's, and they explain his diagnosis.
So you need two things, basically. You need evidence that a job like the National Guard job isn't still within his capabilities, and I think you need, and I'm not sure whether you have, evidence of increasing severity of the syndrome, that it gets worse over time. And who says that, if anybody?
So he was diagnosed with Asperger's when the ALJ hearing was happening, and Ms. Stein-Levy said it's the most severe case, one of the most severe cases she has ever seen. As you move further away from his military work, you can see the situation becoming worse. What you add on to it now is that he also has his physical situation became worse, and because of a degenerative joint toe disease, and that happened in 2008, and Dr. Parmenter was the treating doctor for that. So you do see a degradation, and it's come to a point where he can no longer work. But I would like to, if okay, go back to the first point about why it's so inappropriate that the ALJ researches the claimant on the internet and then surprises him at the hearing with her select findings. So the ALJ deprived Mr. Dean of his due process right to a fair hearing when she privately searched them.
Now, what would he have said if she had said in advance, I see that you've been very active with this bridge thing, or if his lawyer had said, can we have an extension of time, or can we have a renewed hearing so that we can really properly respond to this? What would his response have been?
The first response would have been, he would have explained what his true role was at Bridge Day. And he was not in charge of the whole operation. The ALJ states that she concludes that he was in charge of the whole operation of Bridge Day, therefore he cannot have been disabled by his Asperger's. He was in charge of one event, which was the rappelling, which is the high line. He could have then further explained, he could have then further explained that his team was composed mostly of military and ex-military, and that this was a highly technical work experience and something that skills they had learned in the military. And that would have come out. The problem is that the ALJ made false conclusions and relied on these conclusions to ultimately discredit Mr. Dean, the expert testimonies, the VE's testimony.
Why didn't Dean's lawyer asked for more time to respond?
So, on page 31 and the beginning of page 32 of the separate appendix, it seems that the ALJ was intimidating, in fact even threatening, the attorney. She says, mark your attitude, I will be in Indianapolis for a long time, and you will be in front of me for a long time. It is very reasonable to think that in that moment, could have been a strategic decision that at that moment the attorney decided she did not want to upset the ALJ even further because it might have harmed the client's case. But the problem is, again, with the due notice, it should have been before the hearing, not during. And what makes this case unique? And
things often come up during hearings and trials. That's why lawyers ask for continuances. Your position seems to be that nothing novel can ever come up during a hearing.
That's not the position, Your Honor, and it's true. Things can come up. But the attorney would have needed more time because Mr. Dean has Asperger's. He cannot deal with surprise. She would have had to go through the material with him.
No, counsel, that's why I asked about the lawyer. There's no contention that the lawyer is unable to deal with surprises.
Exactly.
A lawyer who can't deal with surprises should not be in this job.
Exactly. But the lawyer would have to go through the material with Mr. Dean so she could address it properly.
Which is why the lawyer says, you know, Your Honor, we didn't know we were going to be talking about Bridge Day. Could we please, you know, have a continuance until tomorrow morning or until some later? And if she said no, your argument here would be different. She might have said yes.
The lawyer did not bring that up, but it could also be we have the benefit of hindsight. The whole situation blew out of proportion. At that moment, she would not have thought that the ALJ would then rely on these internet searches to ultimately decide to make her conclusions.
Did the lawyer object to that information at the time?
No, the lawyer did not object. And
so the lawyer might have thought the judge would rely on that. The judge mentions it, no objection.
Yeah, I really believe that the lawyer did not object because she was intimidated, but that could have been a strategic error. But
let me just put this in a somewhat broader context.
Yeah.
It is common in Social Security disability cases for an administrative law judge to rely on the applicant's activities of daily life, you know, or, you know, what are their hobbies? What are they doing? Are they physically active? Are they mentally capable of sustaining some sort of long-term project, whatever it may be. And so Bridge Day does seem to be something that was enjoyable to this man, and he did it. And so in that somewhat broader context, whether she should have Googled it, you know, Googled his name or whatever, is a serious issue, and the Social Security Administration seems to have taken it up in their guidance. But it's not stunning to me to think that if that's what he's doing, that that's going to be part of the overall package of evidence that the ALJ looks at.
The issue is that looking at the claimant's work history or social life and activities, that's the way it works. But relying on these mistaken characterizations from an internet source and coming to wrong conclusions because of the internet source, that's unacceptable. And that's where this becomes such a problem.
Because it's inaccurate. Because she thinks he's organizing some huge thing.
I mean, I can point out, so basically, the ALJ thinks that Mr. Dean is not disabled by his Asperger's because he undertook cognitively challenging activities that she and her husband performed. The preconception closed her mind to expert opinions, Mr. Dean's own testimony, and the VE's assessments about the severity of his Asperger's. Simply put, she thinks because Mr. Dean was a sergeant and rigged a high line that he cannot be disabled by his Asperger's. And this is all throughout her opinion. So on page 23 of the separate appendix, she says, she makes a credibility assessment based on preconceptions, concluding that I do not find the claimant's allegations of disabling pain and other symptoms of disabling functional limitations to be entirely credible. Then she continues and says she refuses to give persuasive weight to Ms. Levi's opinion, given the claimant's ability to sustain work activities for over 30 years. She continues, despite his Asperger's syndrome diagnosis, the claimant's work history confirms that he can sustain the mental requirements of various work activities. And to top it all off, she repeats that Ms. Levy's opinion should not be given weight because despite his Asperger's syndrome, the claimant has a long history of being able to sustain work activities. Being able to sustain work activities and having Asperger's are not mutually exclusive.
But it's all about work. That's where I started out. Because
correct.
If it's possible for somebody with Asperger's, let's say to be a computer programmer, I'm not talking about Mr. Dean right now, I'm just talking about a hypothetical person, who does, you know, and so you can sit there in your room all day long in front of your computer and you can write code and you can communicate with other people through electronic mechanisms. You know, there are people who, and actually many Asperger's people are quite bright. They, you know, are intellectually quite capable. So that's work, you know, and you shouldn't get Social Security disability payments if you're capable of being employed in a job like that. So what I am concerned about still is the dearth of evidence about which jobs would fit Mr. Dean's Asperger's, if any, and if there are some, then he should then it was correct to deny him benefits. If there aren't, it wasn't.
Even the job descriptions that the VE conclude that there were in the economy, they aren't those jobs that you kind of described now. The problem is that there's variables that are put into an equation, and the VE says there are these jobs. Definitely the correct variables will not put into that equation, and that is because the ALJ blinded her. She was blinded, and she excluded almost anything that said something about the Asperger's. In the interest of time, I would like to save the rest for rebuttal if there are
that
no questions.
That would be fine. All right. Most of my colleagues have questions. Apparently not. Ms. Ochoa,
good morning.
Is the podium at a good height for you?
I think I can make this work.
I mean, we could bring a chair over and lower it if that would be easier.
I will make do. Good morning, may I please the court. My name is Susana Ochoa, and I represent the Acting Commissioner of Social Security. What this case essentially involves is a claimant who has Asperger's syndrome and who nonetheless has been able to have a long work history. He was in the National Guard for 19 years. 9 of those years, he was a platoon sergeant when he was in charge of up to 32 men. He also conducted some training.
But you've heard what my concern is. There's evidence in the record that suggests that after he left the National Guard, his ability to function around anybody, his ex-wife, you know, his children, anyone, deteriorated. And the VE doesn't really grapple with that. The VE comes up with these weird jobs, ejection molder, small product assembler, and plastic press operator. And I just feel that there's a mismatch between the question asked and the response. And I assure you, I do not at all rule out the possibility that there are jobs sufficiently similar to the National Guard job, even with deterioration. Maybe there are such jobs, but these don't strike me as at all congruent with the overall record of his both his mental and his physical capabilities.
Well, Your Honor, claimant actually also has other work history. He has a 26-year history as an arborist.
He trimmed tree branches. Okay, so somebody said, go take the lower branch off the oak tree, you know, so, oh, fine, you know.
In addition to that, he was most recently a truck driver.
And was not hired by the people because they thought he was so bad with people that they didn't want to hire him.
Actually, he did hold positions as a driver, and he reported himself that he was laid off for economic reasons, and there's no evidence that he lost the truck driving job because of any inability to meet the mental demands of the work or the physical demands, for that matter.
Well, there's evidence in the record that this truck driver institute evaluator thought that he was limited.
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Kilgore from the Truck Driver Institute did note that a claimant had some issues functioning, but he also noted that he had no trouble with authority, with supervision, he got along with co-workers, and I think that all of that, or that evidence, is just one piece of evidence that shows that claimant, despite his Asperger's syndrome, can still have other jobs open. And as a matter of fact, with the vocational expert also testified, and the ALJ relied on this testimony, that claimant was able to return to his past work as a substitute driver. And as I stated, there is simply no evidence that he lost the job because of an inability to meet the mental demands of work, when he himself said that he was laid off because of economic reasons and not because of any other reason. The ALJ,
that's what he could think. I mean, I don't know how much weight I would put on that, but at the same time, we have evidence in the record that he's locking himself in his room, she was still married to him at the time. The wife has to ring a bell to be admitted into his presence because he becomes disturbed if he's around people. Where's the evidence of something structured like the National Guard as a job?
Your Honor, that was not brought up during the hearing, but again, I would like to point out that he was an arborist for 26 years, and that there's no evidence that was highly structured like the military. And also, in terms of his military experience, he was actually a platoon sergeant, so he was in charge of others, and he was interacting with others. He testified that he occasionally, before his accident, before he was physically unable to, he went out with his fellow soldiers. And his departure, his retirement from the military, was due to physical reasons and not because of any inability to continue any other demands, mental demands. And in addition to the long work history, the ALJ considered, we already discussed Mr. Kilgore's reports, but she considered his hobbies as well.
And so what about this internet research? I take it that the acting commissioner, has concluded that this is inappropriate to just kind of browse around in the internet in the middle of a hearing, say, oh, you know, I Googled your name and this is what came up.
Your Honor, admittedly, that is not the agency's policy. The ALJ, in a better scenario, would not have done that.
This seems like a very bossy ALJ. I mean, reading through the transcript, she's rude to people, she interrupts. It's a tough transcript to read because they're just constant interruptions.
I think this case involves unusual circumstances. I mean, the fact that her husband was also part of the military and there was some concern whether or not there was a conflict of interest. She herself worked as an adventure travel guide, as a raft guide, I believe.
So is she introducing extra record evidence, in effect, because of her experience as an adventure guide?
No, Your Honor. I believe that she was making sure that there was no conflict of interest, that there, because of her own experience and his experience, rather than making assumptions based on her own experience. Yes, she brought up the article, but rather than assuming that he was able to do X, Y, and Z, she brought it up and gave claimant an opportunity to discuss what his role was. I'd like to also mention that the rappelling hobby was not new. It was should not have been a surprise that that hobby itself may come up during the hearing, because claimant disclosed it in his function report. This was not a secret. It was a hobby that was well known. And rather than assuming that he was in charge of X, Y, and Z, she gave him the opportunity to talk about it. Admittedly, you know, in a perfect decision, that internet search would not come through. But
so this is a common problem when somebody has some mental issue, just a situation where there's something that's a mental disorder of some kind, because your answer suggests that the mental disorder is entirely unrelated to his ability to give answers that are reliable, and that may be the case with him. It's not the case with everybody with mental disorders. Sometimes people are under delusions that they can do things that they can't do, and if they say, well, yes, I can do it, you just take it at face value. I'm not sure how one works with that problem.
Your Honor, well, in this case, there's the long work history that he, despite his syndrome, no one denies that he has Asperger's syndrome. The ALJ recognized that it's a severe impairment.
It's on the autism spectrum.
She recognized that he has limitations and crafted an RFC that accommodated those limitations by saying that he should not have no transactional work with the public. And that was based on the overall evidence and what she found credible, and including Counselor Levy's treatment notes and her opinion, which the ALJ discounted. But Levy opined that claimant had Asperger's syndrome since shortly after birth.
But what she says, if you look at Levy's letter, she's in the context of saying Asperger's wasn't identified in the DSM until 1994. So she has kind of an aside. She says he's probably had some form of it since birth, but that's not the focus of the comment. It's really just to say no one would have attached this label on it until 1994, because that's when the powers that be who create the DSM identified it there. And then she goes on to discuss her actual treatment of him, this man, as an individual. So I think that to pounce on the fact that he's had this, you know, some people think it's genetic, some people think it's, you know, at least organically based. I'm certainly not qualified to say one way or the other, but I think that one makes way too much of Levy's comment when all she's saying is the reason the diagnosis comes along when it does is because it didn't even exist as a diagnosis at the time he was born.
Yes, Your Honor. But I guess what I'm trying to relay to the court is that he's had this Asperger's syndrome for a long time, but despite the syndrome, again, he's been able to have a long work history
aside from the highly... Did the ALJ cope with any evidence of deterioration?
Your Honor, the ALJ considered claimant's testimony and his wife, Cheryl, at the time of second wife's testimony, but the ALJ also considered that that Cheryl, his wife, said that claimant was considered a genius in his...
He's great at rappelling, except she also says she's got to ring a bell before she goes in the room. I mean, it's a funny cherry pick. Yeah, I mean, you could be great at rappelling and never talk to a human being in your life, I guess. You know,
And you could be great at, or at least functioning and working and earning substantial, you know, gainful or involved in substantial gainful activity, but on the other hand, have other issues that you're dealing with, like as he was dealing with Counselor Levy and his treatment relationship with her.
This ALJ hearing was in 2010, is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the prohibition on internet information was promulgated in 2013, am I understanding that right?
Your Honor, I don't have that information readily.
Well, at the time of the ALJ hearing, was there a rule in place, the Secretary had a rule about use of the internet, these types of Google searches?
I don't know the exact time frame, Your Honor. But I do know that it's not general policy for the ALJ to conduct internet searches.
Currently, and what was the policy in 2010? The same?
I do not know the exact time frame, Your Honor. I'd like to discuss briefly claimant's physical impairments. The ALJ thoroughly discussed non-medical and medical evidence that showed that despite his impairments, his surgery in 1999 for his upper extremities, his wrist, his hand, and then later for his joint replacement and his feet, despite those impairments, claimant is nonetheless not disabled. There is extensive medical evidence showing that his physical exams were normal. He had normal joint movement, normal gait, normal stance, good function. The ALJ considered several physicians' treatment notes and opinions, including Dr. Parmenter's, Dr. Lafayette's. The ALJ also considered the opinions of the state agency reviewing physicians, who also found that he was capable of light work.
His pain seems to have come and gone. I mean, I think the ALJ is a little casual about Dr. Parmenter. Sometimes he's doing well, sometimes he needs more physical therapy, needs more assistance. I'm not sure she's...
But looking at the overall evidence that the ALJ considered, substantial evidence supports the RFC finding. Aside from Dr. Parmenter's treatment notes, Dr. Lafayette's treatment notes, all after the surgery, after 2008, showed that his gait and stance was normal. He didn't complain of muscle aches or joint pain. Physical therapy notes indicated that he had improved range of motion, and as a matter of fact, Dr. Parmenter also acknowledged that physical therapy was helping him. In February 2010, claimant reported to Dr. Parmenter that he was feeling much better than before surgery, and again, claimant reported that the only reason he stopped or he left his employment as a substitute truck driver was because he was laid off due to economic reasons and not because he couldn't meet the demands.
Okay. Thank you very much, Counsel.
My time is up. Thank you, Your Honor. We respectfully request that you affirm the district court's decision.
Your Honors, I would first like to quickly address a point that the Honorable Judge Tinder brought up about the provision, the internet provision that was added in 2013. That internet provision is meant to clarify from the HALEX I-2160 that says that if the ALJ has particular knowledge about the claimant or any other party from an extrajudicial source, that they should recuse themselves. Apparently this has become such a problem that it had to be specifically addressed. It's not a self-standing provision, rather it's meant to clarify. To continue, Mr. Dean tried to recreate the structure that he once had ever since leaving the military, but he couldn't. The ALJ's preconceptions made her substitute her judgment for that of the experts, especially Ms. Stein-Levy, who assessed that Mr. Dean had marked or extreme limitations in 3 of 4 criteria in the 1210 listing: marked restrictions of activities of daily living, extreme difficulties in maintaining social functioning, and marked difficulties in maintaining concentration, persistence, or pace. This assessment is in line with all other experts who specifically treated Mr. Dean for his Asperger's. Honorable Court, the ALJ sought out and relied on external information to disregard Mr. Dean's testimony, his expert providers, and their opinions. A fair hearing is required by the SSA. The ALJ's decision cannot stand. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much for your efforts. Thanks also to Indiana University's clinic, and thanks to the government as well. We will take the case under advisement.